Well, good morning. It's Jeff Wine, host of The Car Show here on Sun Sounds Radio, folks. Once again, an action-packed show for you today. We're going to catch you up on the latest and the greatest of the world of the automobile. Well, it's Long Beach Grand Prix weekend, and I'm actually right now in Los Angeles getting ready to watch the IndyCar race at Long Beach. So I'm recording my show in advance on Friday evening, and we're going to catch you up on everything we know of what's going on, certainly what's been happening today out at Long Beach, which is on Friday. I've got a great story about the Camaro. Guess what? It's coming back. So it's not just Mustangs anymore. Now the Camaro is coming back. We're going to talk about some top brands, most reliable brands. That's always a good feature to talk about. If I'm thinking about buying a car, what's the best car for me to buy? And then we'll also talk a little about what's going on in the world with gas prices. We know it's kind of crazy thing with everything in the Strait of Hormuz and gas prices going up. And of course, it wouldn't be the car show without a little car talk. You know what to do. Fasten those seatbelts nice and tight. It's going to be a fast ride on the car show. Well, let's not bury the lead. This is huge news from the pages of Motor Trend. It says GM is definitely bringing back the Chevy Camaro. Now, as a guy who's never owned a Camaro, who's owned a bunch of Mustangs and even a couple Corvettes and a couple Z cars, I am clapping my hands about the fact that Chevy is bringing back the Camaro. Well, GM has reportedly approved the return of the Chevy Camaro pony car, according to sources cited by the website GM Authority. This would be the seventh generation of the Camaro. The previous versions, which was named the 2016 Motor Trend Car of the Year after exceeding everyone's expectations. Now, the shape and the powertrain of the next Camaro are uncertain. An affordable two- or four-door muscle pony car is a tough business case to make. Last August, we boldly predicted, based off of reports from the deep-throated General Motors sources, that GM would chase the Mustang Mach-E with an electric fastback SUV. Now, that predicted hunchback of a Camaro would have been ridden on the Ultium-derived skateboard chassis offered by a multitude of potential power options. Now, GM has pulled back on its electric vehicle targets across the board and continues to see EVs as an ultimate future, but such transition is going to take a little longer than originally anticipated. And before that, in May of 2024, some 5 months after the 6th-gen Camaro production ended, we reported that GM president and car enthusiast and advocate General Motors GM Mark Roos was angling for the next-generation Camaro to be an electric car, but not an SUV. Yes, we reckoned it would have four doors, as demand for two doors have been plummeting ever since then. More important, Roos wanted it to be an affordable car and start around the price of an Equinox EV. Chevy has always prided itself in providing affordable vehicles, including the Corvette. It's a signature brand that Roos worked tirelessly to preserve. Way back in July of 2020, we hopefully promoted a 7th-generation Camaro two-door, admitting that, well, we don't know much about the fate of the 7th generation at the time, mostly relying on online psychics. The imagery was aerodynamically optimized, and the impression of the designer Michael Castellone thought GM might take the design of a two-door combustion-powered muscle car. Well, it's a new platform, but still rear-wheel drive. As confirmed as a new model, GM Authority reports that Camaro will be built on the Alpha 2 platform for compact and mid-size vehicles with a front engine and rear-wheel drive platform. The last Camaro on the Alpha platform, sticking with the Alpha, suggests Chevy would forego electric and crossover plans in favor of a coupe or a four-door muscle car with an internal combustion engine. Now, Chevy stopped making the Camaro after the 2024 model year, and the car has taken a hiatus before between generations 4 and 5. Camaro is one of the names that is one of GM's most valuable assets, and the car has a loyal following. The new Camaro would be built at the Lansing Grand River Assembly Plant in Michigan, and which was being retooled to make more EVs before GM slowed its EV plans. Production of the Camaro would begin in the fall of 2027, according to the report, making it a 2028 model. Well, this is just great news, the fact that GM is considering bringing back the Camaro. Now, GM has already said that it will make this next generation along the lines of the Cadillac CT5 at the Lansing plant, also which also rides on the Alpha architecture. GM Authority and Automotive News said the plant will also make a new Buick sedan on the same platform. Buick has become the only SUV lineup, as an SUV-only lineup, showing concepts of cars for years using the Wildcat concept as a design template. The most recent concept was on the Electra Orbit, which Buick showed off in August. The last production car from the brand was the Buick Regal, which was discontinued back in 2020. Motor Trend also reached out to Chevy for comment, but the company said it can't comment on speculative reports about future products, so we'll update the story when we get more information. So, GM coming back with a Camaro. Is it going to be a two-door or four-door? I'm guessing it's going to be a four-door because that's the way the world's going, but I bet it's still going to be really cool and really fast. Well, from the pages of Autoblog, it's the most reliable car brands for 2025 and 2026 ranked, and these are going to be the top five brands with the best results. So if you're in the market for a new vehicle, reliability is often a key factor and a deciding factor. Consumer Reports is a leading authority when it comes to vehicle reliability, analyzing owner survey data on hundreds of thousands of vehicles, evaluating them on 20 potential trouble areas, from minor issues like squeaky brakes to a major red flag problems like engines or transmission failure, to create a predictable reliability score on a scale from 0 to 100. Now, to qualify for this, the data from at least two models per brand were required. An Alfa Romeo, Dodge, Fiat, Infiniti, Jaguar, Land Rover, Lucid, Maserati, Mini, Mitsubishi, Polestar, and Porsche. Unfortunately, that did not make this cut, so I'm not sure if they just didn't decide to give them the data, or I'm not really exactly sure what that means. But with all that data that we have from Consumer Reports, here's the top five brands by reliability scores. Number one, and because I own one of these cars, I would agree, or truck in my situation, it's Toyota. Reliability score 66 out of 100, most reliable notable models, Corolla, Corolla Cross, Camry, and the 4Runner. Now, few people would be surprised to see Toyota at the head of the reliability list, but it narrowly claimed the top spot this year as it overcame a few wiggles within some of its new models. Six of the top 10 most reliable cars this year are Toyotas, thanks in large part to their expertise in hybrid technology. While other manufacturers struggle with the complexity of electrified systems, Toyota has refined its hybrid power plants over the last two decades. Its philosophy of continuous incremental improvements ensures that even when a new model comes out or redesigned, the core mechanical components are often vetted versions of existing proven hardware. The 4Runner stands out as the most reliable individual Toyota model, proving that it's despite its complex redesign in 2025, it still has what makes it to be on the top of the list. Number two, Subaru. Reliability score 63 out of 100. Notable reliable models are Impreza, Crosstrek, and Forester. Subaru, which remains among the top three most reliable brands for 2025 and 2026, thanks to its sticking to a standard mechanical formula. Nearly every vehicle in its lineup includes the boxer engine in a symmetrical all-wheel drive format, often sharing other key components. This allows for a more focused approach, as results in the excellent long-term reliability. Models like the Impreza stand out as one of the most reliable individual models currently on the market. Well, number three, are a part of the Toyota family, this is Lexus. Reliability score 60 out of 100. Most reliable models, Lexus IS, Lexus UK, UX, and Lexus NX. Lexus continues to lead the luxury segment by prioritizing a consistent and measured approach to its model lineup. Instead of chasing the latest unproven tech trends, Lexus utilizes platforms and electric systems that have been rigorously tested by its parent company, Toyota. This cautious engineering approach, paired with superior build quality and strict quality controls, makes it the most reliable luxury brand in the U.S. for 2025 and 2026. The IS sedan is currently ranked as the most reliable Lexus model, while the NX is also highly rated, thanks no small part to its Toyota-based underpinnings. Number four, no surprise here either, Honda. Reliability score, 59 out of 100. Most reliable models are the Accord, the Honda Passport, HR-V, and the Civic. Well, Honda maintains its position at the top five by focusing on straightforward, well-developed engineering solutions. While some rivals have struggled to maintain their reliability with their latest offerings, Honda continues to offer products that maintain an enviable blend of performance, reliability, and fun driving characteristics. Vehicles like the Honda Passport regularly receive a very high reliability scores thanks to its tried and true tested underpinnings. The Honda Civic also stands out for its dependability, and it doesn't compromise on the interior tech or the performance either. Rounding out the top five, a little bit of a surprise, not from its performance, but because of it, the reliability score, BMW. Reliability score, 58. That's just one under Honda. Most notable models, the 2 Series, 3 Series, and the X5. Breaking the Japanese automaker stranglehold on the top five, BMW is the only European brand to break into the top five. While cutting-edge technology and class-leading performance have always been the hallmarks of this brand, reliability has sometimes suffered as a result. In recent years, though, BMW has focused heavily on reliability, with its turbocharged inline-six engines being some of the most reliable powertrains in the industry. Now, by refining its software and its electrical architecture, BMW has managed to offer high-performance experience without the typical high European maintenance headaches. The next closest German automaker was BMW's longtime rival, Audi, which managed to place in 13th position this year, scoring just 44 out of 100. And the least reliable brand this year? Well, that undesirable title goes to Rivian, with a score of 24 out of 100. So, yeah, I think for me, the only surprise is the BMW. I've owned several of them. They're great cars. My older ones were reliable, but they were expensive to fix. So Toyota number one, Subaru number two, Lexus number three, which is Toyota, Honda number four, and rounding out the top five, the folks at Bavarian Motor Works, BMW. Well, let's jump into some motorsports. Let's talk about what's going on in Long Beach. And the headline reads, Power leads opening IndyCar practice at Long Beach. Will Power set the pace on Friday's opening IndyCar practice series on the streets of Long Beach? He had the best time of 1:07, as the Andretti Global Honda was enough to edge out his former teammate at Penske, Scott McLaughlin, in the number three Chevrolet. And defending race winner Kyle Kirkwood reinforced Andretti's pace by going third fastest in the number 27 Honda, behind McLaughlin, leaving Chip Ganassi Racing's Alex Palou and Meyer Shank Racing's Marcus Armstrong to compete for the top five. Quote, well, there's still a lot to play out here, and I've been here for several years, and I've seen that Andretti cars are very good here at this track. I think a one-lap qualifying will be very interesting. It's hard to know whether it will suit your style or not, but on the reds, and that's the red option tires, this car is very good. There's still a lot of things to improve on, but we're looking good. Now, Scott McLaughlin's pace came at the expense of the opportunity to get a proper read on the softer compound tires. His session came to an unwelcome end when he lost control in turn number 9 and smacked the wall with the left rear, which brought out the last of the session's three red flags, the most consequential which came out in the opening minutes when Mick Schumacher in the number 47 Rahal Letterman Lanigan Racing Honda stopped in turn 3 with mechanical issues. It was not restarted at Honda's direction, leaving Schumacher and with Saturday's practice session as his only opportunity to learn before he qualifies, and he will have a fresh engine in that car to start the qualifications. And to remind you, Mick Schumacher is Michael Schumacher's son, and Michael Schumacher is the 7-time former Formula One champion. So we talked about top five, Power, McLaughlin, Kirkwood, Palou, Armstrong, and the next five, Erickson, Rosenquist, Lundgaard, Award, and Scott Dixon. So, like I said, looking forward to hitting the streets of Long Beach, hopefully bringing some sound back for the radio show next week, and we'll have those results for the Long Beach Grand Prix for you next weekend. Let's talk a little NASCAR news from that last weekend. And the Cup guys were at Bristol. And the headline reads, Late Race Strategy at Bristol Prepares Gibbs to His First Cup Series Win. Well, and Chase Elliott spun to cause the eighth caution in Sunday's Food City 500 at Bristol Motor Speedway. Driver Ty Gibbs was emphatic message for his crew chief, Tyler Allen. I do not want to give up track position at all, he asserted over the team radio. Allen acquiesced, and Gibbs restarted in lead on lap 486 and held the track position through the ninth caution that sent the race into overtime, and he beat Ryan Blaney to the finish line by 5/100ths of a second to claim his first career Cup NASCAR victory. The margin of victory was the closest at Bristol since Rusty Wallace beat Ernie Irvin by 1 foot in April of 1991. Well, one of four leaders in the eighth race of the season, Gibbs was out in front for only the final 25 laps as the reigning series champion Kyle Larson and Ryan Blaney combined to dominate the proceedings before the decisive caution. It was Gibbs and the number 54 Joe Gibbs Racing Toyota that found his way to victory lane on the half-mile short oval, his first cup in a car numbered by number 54. For the first time, that number has won since Lenny Paun won his only race at Talladega in 1979. After he climbed out of the car, Gibbs was immediately thoughts turned to his father, Coy Gibbs, and Coy passed away the night after Ty won the O'Reilly Parts Championship in Phoenix in the Xfinity Series at that time. That championship was in 2022. Yeah, it's awesome, Gibbs said. It's awesome to be with great people, to be in the position like this. I'd love for my father to have seen this, but I know he knew this was going to happen and was expecting it as well. Yeah, it was a great day for us. The boys just didn't give up. The pit crew was just amazing. This is our family. It's been great. It's such a big deal, and I feel very honored to be in this situation. Now, for those of you who don't know, this young man is the son of the owner of the team, Joe Gibbs, the former football coach for the Washington Redskins, who won multiple championships with them. So Ty is his grandson, and he was visibly moved in the press conference afterwards as he was so excited that his grandson is a NASCAR Cup winner. All right, so Ty Gibbs wins the race, Ryan Blaney second, Kyle Larson in third, Tyler Reddick finishes in fourth, Chase Briscoe in fifth, Todd Gilliland in sixth, Joey Logano had a good day in seventh. How about Ryan Preece finishing in eighth, Denny Hamlin in ninth, and rounding out the top ten was Carson Hocevar. So we'll talk shortly about what's going on this weekend over in Kansas. Well, since the Cup guys haven't hit the track yet, there's really no information about on Friday night what's happening at Kansas. That race is going to be on Fox Television, and that'll be on Sunday afternoon, and the IndyCar race is on Sunday as well. So that should both be on Fox Television. So IndyCar and NASCAR both on television. All right, with a little bit of news for Kansas, the headline reads, Blaney gets a new jackman for Kansas. Well, Team Penske has made another pit crew change for the number 12, Ryan Blaney, ahead of Sunday's race at Kansas Speedway after initially stating that Patrick Gray, who's been on the number 21 Ford for Josh Berry at Wood Brothers, would serve as the jackman. They're making a change. We've just got to get better for sure, Blaney said on Sunday. We're going to have to, if we're going to keep competing, we have to have cars that can win races, and we've got to clean up our pit stops. Interesting enough, Blaney is in second place in the standings, but has overcome multiple pit road problems and violations at Phoenix to win the race. There have also been various issues at Darlington, and Blaney overcame those to finish in third position. And as a pit crew this year, this group has lost a total of 88 positions on pit road this season. So time for a little change over at Penske, and there's some new guys on Ryan Blaney's car. All right, time for a little weird and unusual automotive news. The story is a man who lost his grandmother to suicide finds a unique way of channeling his grief with the Gran Bernini rides. Well, one grandma's unforgettable day about bringing attention to a deeper message about connection ends up with a ride in a Lamborghini. A video shared on Storyful as a woman in her 80s named Tony lit up as she was surprised with a ride in a sleek black and pink Lamborghini in Sheffield, England. So Mark, who's the founder of the company, said, "Are you coming out for a ride with me today?" And she greeted with him as, "Yes, so lovely to meet you." From the moment she spotted the car, Tony's excitement was unmistakable. "That's amazing," before climbing in and laughing as the car picked up speed. The experience, part of the Grand Bordini, was an initiative Cody launched to combat loneliness and isolation for older adults after losing his own grandmother to suicide. "I wanted to prove that life is worth living in many ways, and I don't want anybody to feel that way." For Tony, the ride was more than just a thrill. The pair drove through the countryside. She reflected on aging with a perspective that resonated far beyond the moment. "Age is just your body. I think people, as they grow old, they will be old. But if you've got your independence, the main thing is you won't be growing as old." She shared after losing her partner, she made a conscious decision to live fully. "And I could have sat and cried, but I decided to get out that bucket list and do it myself." So very cool. The story of grandmas going for rides in Lamborghinis. And what an interesting way for a man to pay it forward about his strategy with his own grandmother, and giving people an experience that most people will never receive, as a ride in an Italian supercar, a Lamborghini. So well done, Cody. Well, one of the big things that is affecting gas prices is the conflict over in the Middle East. And according to the Associated Press, Iran opens the Strait of Hormuz but threatens to close it again as the U.S. maintains its blockade. Iran said it fully reopened the Straits of Hormuz to commercial vessels, but questioned the lingering effects about how much freedom ships actually will be able to transit the waterway as Tehran maintains its grip as who gets through the threatened straits, and threatened to do it again because of the blockade of Iranian ships and ports. Friday's announcement about the opening of this crucial body of water, which 20% of the world's oil flows through, came with a 10-day truce between Israel and the Iran-backed Hezbollah militant group in Lebanon. So we'll see what happens here. There's a temporary opening of this strait, but there's a lot of complex political things going on. But as of right now, the straits are open again. Well, it's time to talk some gas prices with our friends over at AAA. Well, gas prices are down just a smidge. Right now, the average gas price in the United States is $4.07 a gallon. Arizona, $4.62. Utah, $4.19. Nevada, $4.49. California, $5.85. Our friends over in New Mexico, $3.90. Colorado, $3.93. Texas, $3.71. Oklahoma, $3.42. Got a road trip coming up that I'll be going through some of those states. Missouri at $3.46. Illinois at $3.43. And ending up in Indiana with $3.82 a gallon. All right, let's see what's going on here in Arizona with our gas prices. Let's talk about gas prices here in the great state of Arizona. And how about this, folks? The least expensive gas in the state is at Sam's Club in Tempe on Rio Salado Parkway at $3.54. Costco at $3.59 in Gilbert. The Costco in Tucson at $3.79. Sam's Club on West Bell Road at $3.83. The Pilot Station in Eloy at $3.85. Express Fuels in Eloy at $3.85. Circle K in Eloy at $3.85. Another Costco in Phoenix at $3.86. So that's exciting when we see gas prices coming down fairly quickly, and the fact that Metro Phoenix is being affected. Let's do a little deeper dive on Phoenix gas prices. All right, well, we just ran through that top list of Sam's at $3.54 to $3.86, and that's Sam's Club and Costco's. Right now, the Costco in Scottsdale at $3.97, Sam's Club at $4.04 in Gilbert, the Costco on Cactus at $4.09, and Sam's Club on Bell Road over in Surprise, that's at $4.09. So if you, right now, it's cruising around town, I think if you can find gas under $4.50 in your neighborhood, you're getting a pretty good price. But if you live in some of these other areas, that's some pretty cheap gas, $3.54 and $3.59 at Sam's Club in Rio Salado and Tempe, and the Costco on Arizona Avenue and Gilbert at $3.59. Well, it's time for a little car talk. Dear Car Talk, back in the day of bias-plied tires, there was a standard X-plus rotation that involved a spare. When radials came along, we were told that they were directional and should be only switched between front and rear. That has kept us on the same side of the car. Now some of the pros do tire rotation on our cars. They've reverted to the old X-plus method. What changed? And that's from David. Well, more experience and better tire construction. When the first radials came into use in the 60s and 70s, manufacturers believed they developed a memory for what direction they turned in. Now, they don't believe the tires had a literal memory, like, hey, remember when David bashed me into the curb outside Fred's bachelor party? But they were concerned that the adhesives in the tires and the internal belts could fail if forces worked on the other side of the tire and they were switched and went in a different direction. And when you switch a tire from the right side to the left side, you change its rolling direction and you change the direction of those forces. As far as the better adhesives, they were developed more real-life experience with radial tires, and manufacturers eventually concluded that this was really not an issue, and it was perfectly safe to switch tire direction. Sadly, they missed the opportunity, and we call this tire amnesia. Not only is it safe to use the X pattern, it's highly desirable because the X pattern you're referring to takes the right rear tire and moves it to the left front and the left rear to the right front, so you're switching both rolling direction and front and rear positions on the tire. Now, if you have a full-size spare, that's a plus because that goes on the right rear and your left front becomes the spare. Now, that rotation evens out the tire wear. Front tires wear faster than rear tires. They carry a heavier load in the steering and the braking of the car, and individual chunks of tread tend to wear down more on the trailing edge than on the leading edge. The reversing the rolling direction evens out that tread and makes even the tires less noisy and will last longer. So, the X pattern or the X plus pattern is now the way to go if you opt to rotate your tires. Now, unless your tires are specifically designed to be a rotational direction, and many are, then you can forget about this issue just like your tires have. Yeah, and the reality is most of my tires, I don't believe my truck is, but I certainly know my Corvette has a directional tire. My Mustang had a directional tire that would only go one way. If you turn the tire the other way, the tire would literally eat itself to death because it was not designed to roll the opposite direction. So it's interesting to hear about this X factor coming back into the world. Well, folks, that's all the time we have for the car show today. My name is Jeff Wine. We'll meet you back again on the radio next Sunday, and you're listening to Sun Sounds Radio of Arizona.